All right, so we have been in a series called Creation Calls, and we are spending time looking at God's creation and how it calls our attention to our Creator and our Designer. So Leonardo da Vinci is quoted as saying, "The human foot is a masterpiece of engineering and a work of art." I agree with Mr. Leonardo da Vinci. So here's what I want you to do. I want everybody to take their shoes and socks off. No. Are you defying a direct order from your minister? Smart. All right. No, you do not have to take your shoes and socks off. But I do want you to do something. I want you to pay attention to your right foot. Your right foot. Everybody know what that is, right? The right foot. I want you to pay attention to our toes. I want you to wiggle your fifth toe, your little toe, your pinky toe, your baby toe. The one that goes wee, wee, wee all the way home. Now, if you can, the fourth toe, your ring toe. Anybody get a ring on their fourth toe? All right, wiggle it. Pay attention to it. It's hard to do, isn't it? It's supposed to be. All right, now your middle toe, your third toe. Try to wiggle it, can you? You can move other toes. It's not just move that one. All of you are sitting here going, I can't just move one. Now your second toe, your long toe. Move that one. Pay attention to it. All right, and now your big toe, your first toe. Also, I did not know this, called your great toe. Now, everybody done that, right? I believe that Leonardo da Vinci is correct, that the foot is an engineering masterpiece and a work of art. Do you know how many bones are in your foot? Tammy, how many bones are in the foot? Where'd she go? Oh, how many, Brian? Okay, either you're right or I'm right. I came up with 26 in the foot. Are you counting the ankle too? Okay, no, just the foot. 26 bones, 33 joints, and more than 100 muscles, tendons, and ligaments. All right, and you could feel those, right? As you were moving, you got very aware of all those little bones, joints, and muscles. The foot is a very intricate thing. There are so many things that can go wrong with your foot. It can break, it can fracture, and when it does, it affects the rest of your body. And you know that if you've ever stubbed your little toe. Is there anything as painful? And your whole body sympathizes, right? You grab it and you start hopping around, all right? Find somewhere to sit down, you rub it. It hurts. And it can any kind of injury, especially a serious fracture, means that it'll be hard to even do something as simple as taking a step, something that we take for granted, that we often do without even thinking, right? We walk all the time without having to think about every step we take. Injure your foot and you will become aware of every step you take. And yet it can bear the weight of the human body, all right? But if it's hurt, we get off balance. It causes problems maybe with other joints. It makes us use our other leg or foot even more so than we normally would do. The foot is evidence that there is a master engineer behind it. In the Bible, his name is Yahweh. We call him God. We could even call him Jesus. Because as was read in Colossians chapter 1, Jesus is our creator. So I've got you in tuned with your foot. Now I want you to get in tuned with your five senses. So there is this grounding technique called 5-4-3-2-1. How many are you familiar with that? 5-4-3-2-1, a few hands. So it helps us ground ourselves in the moment, especially when we're having anxious thoughts, when we feel out of control, when our mind begins to race. Maybe we're having a panic attack. So they'll teach people who struggle, especially with anxiety, this grounding technique. And we're going to do it together as a way of getting in tune with our bodies. You start with five. Five things you can see. So real quick, what are five things you can see? Me. I'm sorry. A picture on the screen. Can be anything. Nothing's off limits. Glenn, lights, pews, podium, table, on and on and on. This is supposed to be something that didn't take a lot of thought. All right? There is no wrong answer. Well, if I say a pew, he's going to laugh at me. No, I'm not. All right? So you can see those five things. And when you do, whether it's the color, the form, the texture, by diverting your focus to your sense of sight, you disrupt the cycle of anxious and stressful thoughts. So you start with five things you can see. Then you move on to four things you can hear. Now, it's going to be hard in a room where we're intentionally being quiet. All right? But what are four things you can hear? I just heard somebody go, laughter. The sound of my deep, melodious voice. What else? Somebody kicking the pew in front of them? Coughs. All right. So when doing this, you notice things around you. It could be a humming fan or birds singing or traffic going by. These sounds help steer your mind away from your inward worries and more toward the world around you, anchoring you in the present moment. So, five things you can see, four things you can hear, three things you can feel. What are three things you can feel? Maybe the shirt you're wearing? Emotions. Yeah, but we're looking for physical touch. We're trying to get away from our emotions in this technique. All right, could be the chair you're sitting in, the floor you're standing on, nice and solid, the person sitting next to you. Could be anything. Could be the Bible in your hands, the phone that you have that you're reading your Bible on and not on social media. All right, so three things you can feel. Two things you can smell. Well, if we'd all taken our shoes off, that would be one. Maybe it's the cologne or perfume you're wearing. Fabric softener in your clothes. Coffee, I'm assuming, that you are drinking. All right, two things you can smell. Maybe it's hand soap. You just washed your hands. Smell the hand soap. Maybe it's the mint in your mouth or the gum you're chewing. Huh? Your beard. All right, that's all you, bud. The distinct smells around you help shift your focus from looping thoughts to your immediate surroundings, reinforcing your connection to the present moment. Last thing, one thing you can taste. Maybe you have gum or mint in your mouth. Maybe you have the lingering taste of Welch's grape juice or the toothpaste you used to brush your teeth this morning. All of us hope that's still lingering. Maybe it's a sip of water. But centering on this final sense completes the cycle and firmly brings you back to the present moment. Now, I did two things by doing that exercise. One, I taught you the 5-4-3-2-1 grounding technique. So if you're ever anxious or worried, you can use that and it'll help calm you. All right, second thing, I made you very aware of your five senses, of your body. It is an amazing thing. The fact that we can hear, see, taste, smell, touch are amazing things in and of themselves. So let's go back to our foot for just a moment. All right, I want to read you a quote from the book Fearfully and Wonderfully Made, by Philip Yancey and Paul Morand. He says, I'm sitting here barefoot, wiggling the small bones in my right foot, half the width of a pencil and yet strong enough to support my weight in walking. I cup my hand over my ear and hear the familiar seashell phenomenon. Anybody actually know what that is? Cup your hand over your ear. You hear something? I hear the ocean. No, you hear the blood circulating through the capillaries in your head. Stretch out my left arm and I try to imagine the course of muscles, cells expanding and contracting in concert. I rub my finger across my arm and feel the stimulation of touch cells. 450 of them are packed into every 1 square inch patch of skin. Inside, a multitude of specialized cells in my stomach, spleen, liver, pancreas, and kidneys are working so efficiently that I have no way of perceiving their presence. All the while, fine hairs in my inner ear monitor a swishing fluid ready to alert me if I suddenly tilt off balance. Isn't that amazing? When my cells work well together, I'm hardly conscious of their existence. Instead, I feel the composite of their activities known as Paul Brand, the author, or Adam Davis. My body, composed of many parts, is one. Paul picks up on this in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. He uses the human body as an illustration of how the body of Christ, the church, works. And he says in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 14, "Indeed, the body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot would say, 'Because I am not a hand, I don't belong to the body,' that would not make it any less part of the body. And if the ear would say, 'Because I'm not an eye, I do not belong to the body,' that would make it any less a part of the body." And he goes on and on. He talks about the ear, the eye, and how all of these come together to form a functioning unit, and how each one of them is important and vital to the health and well-being, not only the spiritual body, but the physical body. The human body is evidence of a master engineer and designer. And we've thought about things that we can easily access and see, our foot. We've used senses that we use every day, the five senses. But did you know that we can go even smaller than that? Did you know that there are machines, motors, biological motors in your body? I want you to be overwhelmed with not only the things that you can think about and touch with your own body. I want you to go a little deeper than that. So I have a video that will explain to you, go ahead, Luke, these little motors that they have discovered within our body. And maybe they will point us to something much larger.
Cells are full of specialized components that perform functions vital to their existence. But how do these components get to the right locations inside the cell to perform their functions? For larger components, a transportation system is needed. Meet the kinesin. Masterpieces of microengineering, kinesins are miniature motorized machines that carry cargo from one part of the cell to another, walking along self-assembling highways called microtubules. Known as the workhorses of the cell, kinesins have 2 feet, or globular heads, that literally walk 1 foot over another along the microtubule, pulling their cargo to its destination. Each foot possesses 2 special locations, called binding sites, that interact with other molecules. One site attaches to the microtubule, and the other binds with ATP, the energy molecule of the cell. When 1 foot binds with ATP and uses its energy, the foot flips over, resulting in the walking motion. Each foot has a short neck, which is connected to a strand of a long coiled stalk. At the end of the stalk is a fan-shaped tail, which holds tightly to the cargo being transported. Kinesins can carry cargo that are many times their own size. Sometimes a kinesin is in danger of getting stuck on the microtubule highway because of blockages caused by other cellular components. To get around such obstacles, multiple motor proteins may be used to carry a single piece of cargo, together providing enough force to break free. Kinesins typically walk away from the center of the cell and toward the cell's periphery. The kinesin's 2 feet work together efficiently, with 1 foot holding fast to the microtubule, while the other releases itself and takes a step forward. This coordinated stepwise movement allows kinesin motors to walk as many as 100 steps per second, moving about 8 nanometers with each step. When not carrying cargo, Kinesins can shift to energy-saving mode to conserve fuel until their next job. The Kinesin plays a vital role in many cellular processes, not just transporting materials, but also aiding cell replication. The walking Kinesin molecular machine. Another example of intelligent design.
All right, what do you think of that? It's amazing. I'm glad it has pictures because I didn't understand half, if any, of what was said there. And I want you to see the complexity of that. To see that life is not just an accident. And I want you to know that you have these little trucks hauling materials in your body right now, millions and billions of them. And it's all by intention. There's a purpose behind it. We truly are, as Psalm 139, which Levi read for us and did a fantastic job, fearfully and wonderfully made. Because Psalm 139 gets into the mystery of human conception and birth. He looks inside the womb and kind of pulls the curtain back long before we had ultrasound. What's going on and how God is weaving us together. Psalm 139 says that God weaves our inward parts. Your translation may say hearts. Mine says inward parts. Literally, it means kidneys, which is a good segue to my good friend Glenn. I want to talk, or let him, the expert, talk about another part of the human body. And I've asked him to get very detailed because, again, I want you to see the complexity of it and be overwhelmed by its design. Hoping that that will help point us to our Creator and make us to stand in awe of Him and praise Him. Sorry, Glenn, you're up.
Well, a very detailed lecture on the kidney would take at least 6 hours. And I know because I've done it. But before I start with my presentation, I want to comment on what was said with announcements. Joe's dad had an artery in his heart that was 99% closed. That means only 1% of the blood that was needed to supply that heart muscle was getting there, and yet he continued to live painfully until he could get some stents put in. That is absolutely amazing that it can do that. And you are the proud recipient of one of those hearts. I taught human anatomy and physiology for 35 years, and I still cannot comprehend the complexity and symmetry of the human body. It's completely overwhelming. I watch sporting events, and I don't watch the sport, I watch the player, and I'm just dumbfounded by what they do. It's like impossible. Nerve signals are traveling at 250 miles per hour throughout their body. You know how long it takes 250 miles per hour to go from your brain to your foot? I can't even snap my fingers and make it quick enough. It's like instantaneous. And then there's a response coming back from the foot that comes to the brain. A pass is thrown to a football receiver who's running at full speed. He is able to coordinate catching that ball coming over his shoulder, moving faster than he is. The timing, the coordination of the vision input, the anticipation, the muscle contraction, the timing, are absolutely just sensational. And they do it all the time. At least to me, as I envision all the systems working together with that split-second timing, it's absolutely astounding what God has made. and you've got one of those. On this sweatshirt, been asked about it a couple of times, this sweatshirt was made to be given to me by one of my classes. And they made this because I kept stressing this is the most important part of human physiology. On the shirt, there are three cells, and there's a capillary. The capillaries are 5 to 10 microns in diameter, or micrometers, whichever you prefer to use. It would take at least 5 of them stacked side by side to make the distance of the diameter of one hair from your head. Sorry, Mo. Well, you got a few anyway on the edges. Fluids and nutrients are pushed out of the end that's attached to the artery because of blood pressure that's generated by your heart. You all know when your heart stops, you stop. That's because everything that's going on in your body is right here, whether it's brain tissue, muscle tissue, whatever. This is the key to everything. And this is what all 11 systems work together to accomplish. They're pushed out of the capillary to the blood. There we have the nutrients supplied to these three cells. And then the cell has no problem getting rid of their metabolic waste products. They just dump them into the surrounding environment. But collectively, the trillions of cells, no exaggeration, that you are composed of, excuse me, do have a problem getting rid of wastes. There we go. I want to take a few minutes this morning and do, unlike what Adam asked me to do, give you a brief overview of the urinary system, whose primary function is to clean your blood of all the metabolic waste products produced by your being alive. Not only does it take care of the waste products, it also maintains the balance of all the ions in your body, sodiums, potassium, chlorines, all those. It also keeps your body pH where it's supposed to be and controls water concentrations. But it doesn't work all by itself to accomplish these. It coordinates with several other body systems. When one system fails, ultimately, you'll find a failure in the other systems as well. The basics of the urinary system. One of these buttons works. Maybe if I push enough of them, it'll go. There we are. Oops, I need to back up. The basics of the system, the kidney.
Help!
Let me get you back. Did he go forward or backward?
I went forward. There we go. Will the pointer work without advancing?
Yeah. As long as you don't push any other buttons. You've got to get your thumb on that button and that button alone.
I need a little thumb. Okay, the kidney. Notice here is the aorta. Blood comes out of the aorta to the kidney. Urine's formed in there, and then it travels through this structure called the ureter down to the urinary bladder, which temporarily stores the urine until you void it. That's a quick overview. Now, about one-third of your entire blood volume goes into the kidney each minute. Each minute, one-third of your entire blood volume. That's why damage to the kidney is so life-threatening. When you damage the kidney, you start dumping an awful lot of blood into the abdominal cavity. The inside of the kidney The inside of the kidney in here is all hollow. Urine that is formed empties into that hollow space, drains into the ureter, I can point that out, right here, which then goes down to the urinary bladder for storage. As blood enters the kidney, you can see that the vessels start breaking down into smaller and smaller vessels. Until eventually, out here in what's called the cortex, you get to a capillary. This little capillary right here has a, it's called the glomerulus. It has a ball, and then around the outside of that is a capsule. That's this capsule here called Bowman's capsule. The fluid, again, because of your heartbeat, the fluid is forced out of that little capillary and into Bowman's capsule, which is connected to this tubule. Now, there's all sorts of different parts of that capsule. They all have different parts and names, but we'll just call it the nephron for right now. You have in the neighborhood of 1 million nephrons in each kidney. I never tried to count 1 million, but I know it's a lot. Only about 1/4 of each kidney is normally being used at any given moment. Therefore, if you only have one kidney, you're fine. The other will make up the slack. Science has in no way come close to being able to synthesize an effective, efficient, or small structure to do what the kidney does. The amount of blood that passes through a dialysis machine, as an example, in a period of 3 to 6 hours, is 1 to 2 liters of blood. Liter and quarter, pretty close, if you want to switch to U.S. measures. In that same 3 to 6 hour period, the kidney will process 45 liters. The comparison just is astounding. That's the best we've got for dialysis. And in addition, the kidney's process will be far more effectively done. Back to the nephron, the functioning unit in the kidney. Blood pressure, as I said earlier, forces fluid out of the glomerulus and into that capsule, right here. The fluid then, which is called filtrate, travels through this, down through another structure called the loop of Henle, et cetera, and all that other good stuff. And you'll notice that there's a blood...
Big thumb.
One more. There. You will notice that there's a blood vessel surrounding all of this capillary. There's a multitude of different hormones and chemicals that are involved in causing the movement of that filtrate back into the blood. The filtrate itself is a mixture of 96% water, a bunch of electrolyte salts, toxins, pigments, hormones, and of course the metabolic waste products like urea that's made in the liver from the breakdown of proteins. You produce about 180 liters of filtrate in 24 hours. That is your entire blood volume 40 to 60 times a day. There are about 125 milliliters produced per minute. Urine is what is not reabsorbed into the blood from the tubule. Thanks. I got another one on my belt that I haven't used yet. But I appreciate it. Okay. So we're producing 125 milliliters per minute. Only 1 milliliter of that will eventually be urine. The rest of it is all reabsorbed back into the blood. That means that you will produce, or you will reabsorb 99.2% of all the filtrate that is produced. That's why the efficiency is way, way beyond anything that humans can build. Now, before I lose control and go way off the deep end in the physiology of filtration and reabsorption, I want to make a couple of quick comments. The kidney does not act alone. There are hormones and nervous system interactions that regulate the kidney. I'm going to give you but one example. There are multiples. This is only one. And that's a hormone called aldosterone. A decrease in blood pressure, an increase in potassium, low sodium, will all cause a group of cells that's near the glomerulus. They're right out here. To release a chemical called renin. Renin then converts angiotensinogen, a blood protein, into angiotensin 1, which travels in the blood to the lungs. In the lungs, it's converted into angiotensin 2. Angiotensin 2 then travels through the blood and reaches the adrenal gland, which sits, wrong picture, sits right on top of the kidney. The adrenal gland then has caused the adrenal cortex to convert cholesterol. Yes, you do need to have cholesterol in your diet, sorry. It converts cholesterol into progesterone. For both men and women, don't get caught up on that word progesterone. Angiotensinogen 2, which has just been produced in the cortex, converts the progesterone into aldosterone. Aldosterone then circulates and causes the distal part of that little tubule to retain sodium ion. That comes back into the blood from the filtrate and causes potassium ion from the blood to go into the filtrate. So aldosterone will result in an increased sodium ion concentration, but a decrease in potassium. Wherever water goes is wherever sodium ion is. So if you retain more sodium ion, you'll pull more water back in. Your blood volume will go up, your blood pressure will go up, and we should be back to normal again. I know you didn't follow all that. My students normally didn't either. But that's just one of multiple systems that are involved in regulating what's going on within you. I hope that you get some understanding of the complexity of this one system and how it integrates into all the systems of your body to bring about a homeostatic condition that allows you to live. It's absolutely astounding what our God has made. To cover it all, by the way, would take 2 semesters with 4-hour lectures every week.
Repeat after me.
I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
Thank you, Glenn. It's astounding, isn't it? And he did that in approximately 15 minutes. Like you said, it would take 2 semesters. And yet David talked about it thousands of years ago. Now, not to that degree, but he did mention the kidneys. And he said that something as simple as a kidney, maybe not so simple, points to our Creator. No, in a time when the worth of human life has been vastly cheapened, the psalmist affirms the supreme value of all humans. In this psalm, David invites us to reflect on the sanctity of life, not as a political slogan or a wedge issue, but as an expression of the worth that God gives to the work of His creation. When we reflect on this psalm, we can't help but say, God is good. God is great. Psalm 139 puts the work of God the Creator on display and reminds us that it's not just cosmic, it is inescapably personal. Six times in the first six verses, the psalmist addresses God as you. It was you who formed my inward parts. It was you who knit me together in my mother's womb. As the thoroughly known creator of God, humans have both an identity and a value that endures. Verse 14 in my Bible is translated as, I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. The RSV translates it a little differently. It says, I praise thee, for thou art fearful and wonderful. I think both translations and affirmations are true, and they need to be held together. The wonder of God, our Creator, and the wonder of creation are intricately woven together. They are and display the handiwork of God. And all of this helps us answer a very important question. Who am I? Who am I? I think that question and its answer is particularly urgent in our time. It's not only teenagers who struggle with a sense of identity, it's the parents whose children are all away from home for the first time, it's the retiree who has nowhere to go in the morning, the caregiver whose spouse has died after a long illness, the man or woman struggling with own identity issues. One way or another, at one time or another, we all ask, who am I? Where do the meaning and value of my life come from? Psalm 139 answers the question. You know, Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote a poem called, Who Am I? He wrote it while he was in prison, a Nazi prison, waiting for his execution. Bonhoeffer contrasted what others said of him with what he knew of himself. All kinds of rumors and lies were spread about Dietrich. He ends the poem by asking, who am I? They mock me. These lonely questions of mine. Whoever I am, thou knowest, O God, I am thine. I am God's. He has made me. The opposite extreme among the saddest words in American literature are those spoken by Biff Loman in his father's grave. He had all the wrong dreams, all wrong. He never knew who he was. And yet, even we who do not know who we are nevertheless known fully by our Creator and eternally loved by the Lord who gave us our bodies. Psalm 139 invites us to receive an identity rooted not in the things that we say about ourselves, not the labels that are assigned to us, but in the One who knows us more deeply and more lovingly than we could even know ourselves. Perhaps Paul had the words of Psalm 139 in mind when he wrote in 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 12, now we see in a mirror dimly, but when we see face to face, but then we will see face to face. Now I know only in part, then I know fully, even as I have been fully known. Listen, God is your creator. Your identity, your value, your worth are rooted in Him and what He says of you. Because the God who knows us thoroughly loves us fully. Our lives have a worth that cannot be taken from us by ourselves or by others. The value of our lives does not come from what we achieve or what we possess or what others may think of us or what we even think about ourselves. It comes from the God who knows us, who wove us together in our mother's womb, who names us, from whom steadfast love, nothing in all creation can ever separate us. We truly are fearfully and wonderfully made. As Charles Wesley wrote in one of his songs, when we look at the human body, we're lost in wonder, love, and praise. What would it look like to ground your identity in the knowledge that God created you? He took the time to weave your body together within your womb, and that He loves you immensely. Our worth is found in the reality that we are God's handiwork. What if we valued ourselves as much as He values us? What would it look like for us to value others as much as God values them? If we live with the reality that we are God's handiwork and that we are good, loved, valued, and even enjoyed by our Creator, how will it change our lives? How will it change this church? And how could it possibly change the world? If you would, let us all stand and sing.